Welcome to Talking Book Publishing with Kathleen Kaiser, brought to you by Writers and Publishers Network.
Hello, and welcome to Talking Book Publishing. I'm Kathleen Kaiser, your host, and today we have author Jules Selbel with us, who, by the way, I hear you just won another award for your book that came out last year, 10 Days. Tell us about it, Jewel.
This was the Killer Nashville Silver Felchian Award. And there's a conference every year. It's been going on for, they told me, I think since 2006, this conference. And it just keeps growing every year. There was more than 400 writers there, mystery writers. It's all mystery writers. So there's cozy mysteries, there's comedy mysteries, there's investigator mysteries and suspense mysteries and supernatural. So there's five categories. And mine won for the best investigator novel of 2022, which was a big surprise. It was really fun because I've been a finalist in a couple of other awards this year, Forward Reviews and Clue Award and Maine Literary Awards and a couple others, which is all great because you're just so happy to be nominated. But so I wasn't expecting this. I just thought, okay, this is great. I'm a finalist. You know, people talk to me at this conference because I am a finalist. But then I won the award and I talked to so many more people. We all ended up at the bar afterwards. And it was just a really fun conference. I learned a lot at it and met a whole bunch more mystery writers. And I came home with this big, heavy silver medal with Best Investigator Novel on it.
Oh, that's fabulous. Congratulations.
Yeah.
I have a question because I find writers' conferences they helped me so much when I was first starting out. And now I produce the 805 Writers' Conference, which, by the way, Jewel will be a speaker this year on the mystery panel.
Right.
But what do you learn? What do you take away from conferences that make them so valuable?
Well, I think first and foremost for writers, it's you're spending 3 to 4 days with other writers. And because being a writer is such a solitary endeavor, it's you and the page and your brain and your typing and your insecurities of like, well, I don't know, does this work? You know, should it be this? Should it be that? So to be with other people who are going through the same thing every single day and they understand it, they empathize, they have their own stories of angst, it's really fun. And I think writers like each other because maybe they understand the pain and the loneliness and the insecurities that all writers have to have. Now, they don't have to have them, but I think they are there. I don't know if James Patterson is insecure. I'm not sure. But so I think meeting the people is great. And then a lot of time and effort usually is put into panels. And what do writers want to hear about? What questions are they going to have? How can people help each other? So there were panels at Killer Nashville, everything from how do you work theme into your mystery novel, one on dialogue. I was on one about what do you do in the middle? You've got a great beginning. You know how it's going to end, but that big fat middle is always a problem. So we had great discussions about that. So I think learning, first of all, meeting other writers and making new friends. And then second, learning on the panels. And then the after times of just like being at the, having dinner together, being at the bar, chatting over breakfast. It's just nice to feel like you're in a strong community.
That's what I find, that because we are isolated when we write and you need a community to support. And the thing I like about it is none of us are really competing with each other.
Right.
You know, we all have our own stories. We're each storytellers in our own right. And we have a unique story and we can learn from each other and put resources together, a network that's like, you know, I tell people when you come to a conference, it's really an incredible way to build your network of support. Say you hit a block, maybe reach out to some of them. I've hit this point. What do you suggest? And there are people you've met and you trust. It's not reading an article by somebody, which is always helpful, but it's somebody you've met and talked to and trust.
Yes, yes. And also it's fun to talk to other people who are in the mystery genre and mystery crime genre, but are coming at it from different ways, supernatural or cozy mysteries or whatever, and seeing the differences that they're engaging in and that they are trying to, you know, make sure that they're speaking to that particular audience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's an incredible conference to have 400 mystery writers at. That's a fabulous conference. So
yeah,
that's an annual event, right?
Yeah, and the guy named Clay Stafford started it, and he's just a lovely man. And he did some great interviews with Hank Felipe Ryan, who was one of the main people there, and Charles Dunlay. And they were both wonderful speakers, very generous with their time, had a lot of good tips, and they hung out the whole conference. They went to panels, they were on panels, they ate with us. And so, you know, they're best-selling New York Times type writers. And so they were very, very generous with their time, which was nice.
Yeah, that is something that I found. I heard this many, many years ago, and it was from somebody. They said, if you can't share what you know, then you really don't know very much.
Those
people who consider themselves experts but won't share or teach or show, they really don't know that much, you know? And because when you're sharing information, you learn something too. You know, you've been a writer your entire life, and let's just give everyone a little bit of a background on you. You started out as a playwright in New York, right?
Yeah, well, I actually started out as a playwright in Fargo, North Dakota. my friend Kristen Rudrud and I would write plays and put them on in my garage. And Kristen actually was in the movie Fargo, and she was the one who was put in the wood chipper. And she was a wonderful actress. And so she stuck with acting and I stuck with writing. But so Fargo, North Dakota, then I went down to school in Texas at SMU in Dallas. And I was in the acting program, but I was always writing and I had plays done there just, you know, within the college, which was fun. And I learned a lot. And they were mostly kind of absurdist, farces. And then I moved to, when I finally moved to New York, I had a play off Broadway called Boiling Point that an agent came and saw. And he said, I want to represent you, but you have to promise to do film and television because I need to make some money off of you. And because playwrights, it's very hard to make a living as a playwright unless you become, you know, huge, huge. And your plays run for forever. And so I moved into film and television because I'd had that wonderful teacher in junior high who had us making films and watching films. And he had a great library of old films. So I was one of the nerdy kids that hung out there and made the films and stuff like that. So I was very happy to move into film and television. And I got very lucky in LA. I worked for all the major studios. I did Young Indiana Jones Chronicles with George Lucas. For years, I did Life Goes On. I did Melrose Place, Space Above and Beyond. I wrote the pilot for Hercules, and I did movies for Disney. Ariel's Beginning, which is the third Ariel, Cinderella 2, and the second Hunchback of Notre Dame. I had a wonderful time in LA as a writer. I still wrote some plays, but then as a kid, I always wanted to be a novelist. So it was finally time for me to go, move to Maine, write your novels.
Now you spent some time in Florence where you really started. Yeah, I think they were historical novels, correct?
Yeah, I was. I became a professor also while I was out in LA, and got my PhD in film. And my focus was film genre. So I have a book out called Film Genre for the Screenwriter that I really like. And I still, even myself, I'll go back and look at it because I broke down every genre to the components, and also kind of looking at what are the audience's expectation. If you don't hit their expectation, they can be a little bit disappointed. Mm-hmm. And so meet their expectation and then go on and go further. And that's what the book is about. And so as a professor, I was asked to come teach in Florence. I did it for 3 or 4 years for 4 months at a time. Mm-hmm. And while I was there, I wrote Find Me in Florence, which is a book about a woman whose mother was a mud angel. And the mud angels in 1966, the 66, 65, the Arno River flooded to extraordinary devastation. Some dam broke and there was huge water, rain and stuff. And the Uffizi, the museums, the bibliothèque, the libraries, everything were just flooded. And all these rare paintings and sculptures and books were being destroyed. So people came from all over the world. They would hear about it and they would get as close as they could get to Florence, hitchhike into the city, be handed, you know, rubber boots, and they would start digging into the mud and finding these things and handing them off to what became the, they're called the restoration doctors or something like that. They would hand them off to people who could finally restore. And the restoration work still continues to this day. It's a thing called the Restoration Hospital that I went to. And in my book, this woman's mother was a mud angel. And something happened to her while she was in Italy, but she never talked about it at home. And finally, on her deathbed, she asked her daughter, "There's something I want you to know, but you need to find it in Florence. You find me in Florence." So she goes to Florence and finds out her mother's passed. And at the same time, her life falls apart and she finds new love and new reasons. That kind of thing.
That's great. So when you move, you live in Portland, Maine now, and you and I spoke once about the fact that you'd always sort of want, you read mysteries. That was what you liked to read. And you've sort of had this character knocking around in your brain, and you got to Portland and you found your location. Is that right?
Yeah. You know, when I was in LA and I was thinking about, okay, when are you going to write your novel that you always promised yourself that you would do? And I started a couple things, and I love film. I love film history. So I was kind of fooling around with this setting a period mystery series in LA, maybe in the 30s or the 40s, and the studio system and stuff. And I just never really stuck to it. And then I got to Maine, and I fell in love with the city so much. And this woman, just my protagonist, just kind of popped up on the page. And I just kept writing and kept writing and kept writing. And I really love her. And so there's going to be 10 books in the series. So 10 Days came out last year. 9 Days comes out in 3 weeks. I'm working on 8 Days right now. And then I'll do 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
All right. Now, this is the D. Rommel mystery series.
Yes.
And so 9 Days comes out September 28th.
Yeah. Yeah. And you understand that publishing stuff, Kathleen.
Yeah.
They say September 28th. And then I get an email next day going, okay, the book is ready. It'll be available, you know, in a week. And I'm like, what? So I think September 28th is the official day, but I know on Kindle you can pre-order it now. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure when the pre-order for the paperback or hard copy will be available.
Yeah, that probably usually goes up about 2 weeks beforehand. Yeah, for the pre-orders.
You know everything.
Well, thank you very much. You also have, you're with Panda Moon Publishing. How did you find them, or did they find you?
Well, I self-published Find Me in Florence. It was under a different title, Piazza Carousel. Mm-hmm. And because I had been in Hollywood for so long, and TV goes quickly. You write something, if you're on TV series, you write something, it goes into production pretty quickly, and then it's on the air pretty quickly. If you write a feature, it can take years to get it done. I had the best time in Hollywood, and I would never have not done it if I had had a choice, because that's so fantastic. But at some point, you just kind of, or for me, I wanted to just write my own something and not have so many fingers in the pie. Because in Hollywood, you've got the director, you've got the producer, you've got many producers, you've got the studio executive, and everybody, you write the screenplay and everyone goes, great, great, great. Now let's change it to this. Let's change it to that. Let's change it to this. And often there were times where I just felt that the essence of the original story that everyone was excited about maybe had gotten less. Mm-hmm. So it was, I kind of approached this book about Florence as an independent feature for myself. Not that I'm going to write it, I'm going to produce it, I'm going to, like, you know, get the cover done and get it out there, and not go through, as you know, with publishing, sometimes it takes so long to have people read it. And then, you know, you'll get emails back. Well, you may not hear from us for 6 months, but we'll get back to you. So I thought, I'm done taking notes. I want to just do my independent production. So I put it out, and then it did pretty well. And Panda Moon found it through Amazon, and then they asked me to send it, and they decided, okay, we want to republish this under our imprint. And I said, well, that's great, but what does that entail? Are you going to, like, be giving me notes? Because I've, like, already independently produced my book. And they said, no, but you need to go through our editorial process. And it was great, because the editor at Panda Moon, all she did was suggest a couple of, it actually became 3,000 words shorter, which was perfect. And that was, you know, and she said, you know, you could probably lose this because we already know it from here and stuff like that. So actually the book became tighter, and I really appreciated that. So then, Find Me in Florence, we retitled it. It was, became Find Me in Florence. And then I started the mystery series.
Yeah, well, it's fabulous. And I think one of the, when you're writing, and tell me if this is it for you, there is a need for an editor, because mm-hmm. sometimes, like, I understand what you mean with people coming in from all over with the producers and the director and all these other people with their notes. But an editor is more of a one-on-one relationship, don't you find?
Well, yeah. And with Find Me in Florence, when I was doing it myself, it was called Piazza Carousel, I hired an editor who had used to work for Penguin or one of the big publishers, and he had become a freelance editor. And because I thought, well, you know, this is my first novel, what do I know? And so I did send it to him, and he said, oh, well, this, and this. He said, but I'm really interested in this character, who was not a major character. And he said, why don't you change the book so it's more about the relationship that Lynn is the protagonist in Find Me in Florence, that Lynn has with this character. And I said, well, no, I wrote it because of the mother and the mud angels and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And so he had, it was like that kind of gut punch of sometimes you get sitting in a Hollywood executive's office of, like, yeah. Oh, wait a minute, you hired me to write this, and now you want me to rewrite it to be that, you know? And so I said, well, thank you very much. And, you know, I kept working on the book, trimming it and stuff like that. But then I wrote the book I wanted to write. So yes, I think editors are good if they are willing to let the story that the writer wrote mm-hmm. be the story and not write the book that the editor wants it to be. So I was kind of surprised to find that in the book world.
Mm-hmm.
But actually in Killer Nashville, you know, I went to some sessions where book agents were talking and people would read their material and the agent was going, oh yeah, wow. Well, if you do this and if you do that, and you do that. And I was like, wait a minute. So I'm kind of into the purity of the writer's voice and story sense. Because once you start writing for someone else, then it, for me at this point, it's not as much fun.
Well, you've already been a gun for hire.
Yeah. Yeah. And I learned a lot. I mean, I'm not saying that all these notes in Hollywood were not good. Some of them were fantastic. I worked with one executive at Paramount named Lindsay Duran, and she was amazing. And my script just got better and better and better. So I'm not saying that those notes sometimes weren't fantastic. Many times they were. I did one project for HBO they kept saying, this is great, this is great. Now add this. And it was like a whole new C storyline. Mm-hmm. And I was like, but there's no room. Because, you know, I was supposed to be 47 minutes because it had to fit into a, you know, this is when things had to kind of fit into a time thing. And they said, no, we would like you to try. And every time it got better because I was cutting out all the fat. So I learned a lot from that, like exactly how much story you can get into a certain amount of time or pages.
Right. That's one thing that I find with writers that have never written for a living, that have had other jobs, maybe they're in their 50s or something, and they're having enough time to start writing. They don't understand that there's a lot of it can be condensed down. They think they need all that explanation, like you say, the fat, but mm-hmm. really they don't, because that bogs the story down. And yeah. like what you said with your Panda Moon editor, she took out 3,000 words, but it tightened it up.
Yeah. And the thing is I'm reading a novel now that a friend of mine wrote. He's a mystery writer. He's a wonderful writer. He's always very topical. But I find that he repeats information. And I'm thinking, well, wait a minute. I've read that like 3 pages ago or 10 pages ago. Does he not think that the reader retains? Or I'm kind of wondering how people who are working solely on computers now are actually, do they actually see their work as a whole in a way where they can just use a red marker or a black marker and just go, whoop, I said that before, I don't need to say it again. I write on the computer, I also write longhand, but it goes on the computer, but then it gets printed out. And every chapter will be gone over like 10, 12, 15 times just to make sure that it's as tight as possible and that I'm not repeating information.
Yeah, I think the problem is that a lot of people have never been edited. I got my first job as a journalist when I was 20. So I've had editors my whole life. Even when I was off in marketing, you still get edited. You know, mm-hmm. and I don't have a problem with it because usually they tighten it up or yeah. they see a problem that I don't see, you know, and hey, if it's going to make it better, I'm all for it. I don't have an ego that every word I've written is priceless,
mm-hmm.
where some people, because they've never put this much effort into ever writing, maybe since they were in college, you know, they think every word is priceless. And it's like, you really do need some editing. I have someone right now I'm working with, and it's like, this is not a 500 page book. Though you've yeah. written 500 pages, there's a lot of tightening that you can do that speeds the story along. And that's what people want. You've come from entertainment with visuals, where you were writing for television and movie. Don't you find people want their books sort of that way now too?
Yeah, I think some people do, not everyone. There's some people who want to sit down with David McCullough and just, he's such an amazing writer, and you just want to get into John Adams' world and just kind of like sink into it. And then there's the literary fiction people that just turn a phrase, a sentence so beautifully. And the pace of the story is perhaps not page turner type. But I know I love mysteries and I want my mysteries to be page turners. I want to be like, oh no, now what's going to happen? And that cliffhanger that many mystery writers do at the end of every chapter, I admire it, but if it's 2 o'clock in the morning and I really want to go to sleep, but I get a cliffhanger, I'm going, oh, please. And they make me charge on. So.
Yeah, I find that too. It's usually around 2 a.m. It's like, oh God, I can't read another chapter. I've got to go to sleep, you know, yeah. But you know what? That's a good book.
Yeah. Yeah. So I tend to like, I don't like repetition. There's something in me that goes, well, wait a minute. Don't you think I was reading? Don't you think I can retain things? And so if I find a writer who's repeating information a lot, I might start skimming a little bit, which is terrible to do, but I want to get to the action that's moving the story forward.
Right. That's the part that you want. That's the part that you want. So we have Dee. Let's get back to the books you're writing now. And Dee Rommel, she's a little bit of a flawed character. How did you come up with her?
It was one of those days. It was probably a rainy day in Portland, and I was sitting at my desk and I thought, okay, let's go. And I started writing this scene she just kind of sprang to life. I know that sounds really, really like cheesy, but I just kind of imagined her, and I wanted it to make it so that people knew who she was on the first page, but even within the first paragraph and a half, you were like going, what's going on? What's going on? Who is she? And so 10 days, you find out pretty quickly that the lower half of her left leg has been amputated. And we know it was a terrible incident, an accident, because she was a policewoman on the Portland police force. And it was, you know, she was after the bad guys and this terrible thing happened and she had to have her leg, part of her leg amputated. She was an athlete. She's tall. She's got a big chip on her shoulder. She's beautiful. She's just a lot of contradictions. And she was hurt a lot, not only physically, but emotionally also. Her boyfriend didn't want to deal with it. He left. Her father had died a couple years before. She misses him a lot. Her mother lives in Boston. And so they're close, but they're not around each other. And her mother is a very beautiful, petite, elegant woman, where Dee is much more of a, let's just grab the bad guys and get them, you know? And so she, her godfather, Gordy, is a private investigator. And to get her out of the apartment, he says, you're going to come, you know, do my books while you're on medical leave and figuring out what you want to do next. So while she's doing that, she's pulled into doing one of the cases. And, it's like she's got this thing. And I think a lot of people do. We want the world to be just in some way. We want justice in our world. We want, that the people who do wrong to be caught and taken out of the populace in some kind of way. And and she's tough, but she loves her friends and she's got this need for justice. And so she just kind of goes whole hog at everything, which I love to write because I'm not that way. a lot of writers are. I'm kind of watching, I'm watching. And but every time I have the inclination of letting her kind of stepping back and being a voyeur, go, no, that's not Dee. she goes right at it and she says what's on her mind. She takes the action she needs to take. And she has a little bit more challenge now, but it works.
Yeah, it really does. I enjoyed 10 days and there's one scene in 10 days. I will not tell what it is, but you need to read the book because that thing has stuck in my head. It was the most frightening scene and I had no idea it was coming. And it was just like, whoa, you really got me with that one. You really got me with that one. And I've read 9 days and I really think, Dee is a great character. And you, now with the second book, I'm excited to see how you develop her because I love series. I love to get to know a character and a few other people in the story and watch the worlds that they walk through and the people they get to know and what they're confronted with and they're challenged with. And you've got a really good one going, Jewel, and I really appreciate you joining us today. And we look forward to having you at the 805 Writers Conference. And if anybody wants to know more about Jewel or where to get her books, they're on Amazon, or you go to her website, which is jewelselbo.com, correct?
Yes, it is. And they're at, they're on all the online bookstores.
Yeah.
I know that like some of the major bookstores will have them, but if they don't have them in stock, all they have to do is say, order this for me and they'll get it.
Yeah. And by the way, the covers are really striking with the number and the days. It's really an interesting look for each of them.
Yeah. Yeah. Pandamoon did a good job on that.
Yeah, they did it good. It's nice to find a good small publisher, than you have there. I like people to know you don't have to be with a big house.
Yeah. There's just so many people now, really fine writers that I know that are having trouble because the big houses keep merging and squeezing out some of the smaller, less flashy writers that are like brilliant writers. But so, yeah, I'm very happy with Pandamoon. Yeah.
Right. Okay. Well, thank you for coming. And you'll be there. And this will be up right before your book goes on sale, which is September 28th. And I believe that the first few days, the ebook is going to be free. So Great. If anybody's listening, download the ebook and leave a review because reviews are so important to writers. And I will be writing my review, but I really liked it. I appreciate you letting me talk with you today. And thanks for coming, Jewel.
Yeah, so that's 9 days, a Dee Rommel mystery. Thank you so much.
9 days, and it's Jewel, and it's S-E-L-B-O for her last name. And she has 10 days, and she has 9 days now coming. So thank you, Jewel.
Thank you, Kathleen.
Talking Book Publishing is brought to you by Writers and Publishers Network, a resource for writers and indie publishers at every level and offers tools to be successful in their writing career. writersandpublishersnetwork.com. Don't miss our after-hours segment, Conversations with the Producer, a segment where our producer, Adana Moriarty, talks with our guests and lets the conversation mosey wherever it moseys to.